Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Support for 100 Words, the podcast, comes from Talenti. When Talenti makes gelato and sorbetto, they tend to get a little overzealous. Do they need to use so many raspberries in their Roman raspberry sorbetto that the machine broke? Did they need to try 25 different chai teas to find the perfect spice blend for their vanilla chai gelato? Did they have to invent giant mint steepers to make their Mediterranean mint super minty? Does their obsessiveness make Talenti gelato and sorbetto the greatest? You be the judge. But yes, it does make them the greatest. And they're also the judge. Talenti, the delicious is in the details. And trust me, this stuff is incredible. I've been eating it all summer and I have to work out a lot, but it's great. Trust me. Dive in. You'll love it. Now, here's the show. Yes. Welcome to 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I'm your host, Ray Harkins. Hopefully you're doing well this beautiful day, whatever you're deciding to listen to it. Or maybe it's in the future and you are listening to this like a year after it came out. Either way, welcome. And we are discussing people who are involved in independent music, whether it's working at record labels, whether it's, you know, being publicity people, whatever. As long as you're connected to independent music and it runs through your veins, like it runs through my veins, then that is who we are bringing on the show and doing a nice in-depth discussion with them about, you know, how important that stuff is. And this person embodies that because they've been at it for quite some time and playing in some incredibly influential and monumental bands. Dave Lombardo, he played in Slayer. He also currently plays for Suicidal Tendencies, Misfits. The dude is a workhorse, and we actually talk about that. And I'm trying to think of in terms that I can even express of how cool it is that I get to hang out with Dave Lombardo for an hour and talk about his life and talk about things that motivate him and, you know, talk about being a dad. Like it was a very, very fun discussion that we had. So I hope that you are, you're ready for it. Cause if you're not, then press pause, but I think you're ready for it. So you're okay. Let's get some plugs out of the way and then we will talk about Dave and then we'll dive into the interview. So obviously this show is part of the Jabberjaw Media Network. And if you like this podcast, because it's hard to discover cool podcasts, right? And that is why I'm here to tell you about two particular shows. One of them, Mike Herrera Hour. So, Mike Herrera, you know, MXPX, like everybody knows that dude, right? Well, he does a podcast. He's been doing it for quite some time. I want to say it's maybe he started his like maybe a year or so after this show existed. But regardless, he's plugging away, doing his thing, doing awesome content. I hate to use that word. Sorry. Doing awesome interviews. It's not too dissimilar to what this show is. But yeah, he kind of goes at it, you know, from maybe a different angle. So go listen to the Mike Herrera Hour on any podcast catcher you may have. And then also, a good friend of mine, Doc Coyle, does the X-Man podcast. He's actually a previous guest on the show. He played in God Forbid. He's just a dude in and around town. He lives in Los Angeles now, which I actually have not run into him since he's moved out here. But regardless, he does an incredible podcast too. His is more focused on the metal world than anything else, which that's why I figured this is a perfect place to tell you about it on this particular show. But yeah, Doc does a great job of interviewing people and having a definitely fly on the wall conversation, you know, shooting the crap, so to speak. But yeah, that's what we got as far as plugs are concerned. I actually just recently got back from a outdoor camp. And I know that sounds maybe a little unconventional or weird for an adult to go to a camp, but it actually was a camp for survivors, people who've been affected by cancer and their families. And this is an unbelievable foundation, Me1 Foundation, for those of you who you know, might be interested in that. I couldn't recommend it more. It was in the Santa Cruz Mountains. It was beautiful. It was super hot, which sucked. But everything else about it was unbelievable and just super fun. And it was great to be able to, frankly, just hang out with my family and not have any of those real life distractions kind of coming at us. So yeah, I came back feeling very inspired, very, very recharged, you know, which is what you should do after some sort of vacation. But yeah, so I hope that you, you're finding your vacation time here in the summer and the ability to take a break, because that is an incredibly important aspect to, you know, being creative and being productive. Because I think so many people have this notion of like, oh man, I got to work my fingers to the bone. And like some of that is true, but like you need to be able to disconnect and give yourself some care and some TLC, some time down, just, you know, sit and read a book. Like all that stuff is very, very helpful. And I want to remind you to do that. And then, yeah, like I was talking about, Dave, just a warm dude. I really wasn't nervous about this conversation because I've listened to a few other shows he's been on, and he's definitely making the rounds. You know, I see other podcasts he's appeared on, and on that note, I really try to focus on having a different conversation than what he's maybe had in the past. And like, yes, there are certain notes that I need to hit as far as like, you know, he's where he's grown up and that sort of stuff. But I try to preload the question where it's just like, okay, I know you were born in Cuba and blah, blah, blah. And like, you'll hear that in the interview. But I really am cognizant of it because I listen to a ton of podcasts, and you can tell when a person is going around on a press tour and like, you know, maybe they appear on, you know, the Nerdist show and then they appear on WTF. And I'm just like, I need to hear one interview from this person. And I hope that my episode of a show kind of cuts through the clutter. Not saying the other stuff is bad, you know, it's fine, but I'm just trying to make sure that you know, this percolates to the top of your radar. So I want you to know that. But yeah, anyways, here's my discussion with Dave, and then I will talk to you after the episode is over, like we usually do, right? Okay, and stick around because I always mention the guest of the next week's show on that little outro. So if you tune out, then you're missing out. So here's Dave. I was more of a punk and hardcore kid, so metal crept into my life more in high school via the drummers that I was playing with, because they were, you know, clearly more influenced by the metal side of things. And the dude I played with for years, you know, was a devotee of you in regards to, you know, learning from you and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Is it just because you've been able to be so prolific over your drumming life when, you know, reality, it's the most physically demanding of all the instruments. And, you know, it's harder as you get older to be able to have the stamina and everything like that.
Is it?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know. I feel like, you know, I've been told this, you know, many times by my closest, you know, people that surround me. You know, you tell me, you know, that I was made to do this. I was born to do this. Mm-hmm. And so being tired or slowing down, I don't think that's going to, you know, happen to me anytime soon. But yeah, it's really interesting how my career has just, you know, it's a roller coaster, but I've maintained to always keep my head above the water. And if not, you know, get to a point where I'm absolutely comfortable. And right now I am like in this Zen, music Zen, where I have this amazing balance of three different bands plus little projects that I do here and there.
Right.
And it's satisfying. It's musically, it's gratifying is what I'm trying to say, you know. And I don't know. It's really, I'm very grateful. I'm happy. I'm surrounded by positive people. And, you know, I have a great, you know, assistant, you know, management team where, you know, my schedule is laid out, and I don't fuck shit up like I would normally do. I say if I would book things myself, I overbook myself. I'll miss an interview or I'll miss an appointment, and that doesn't look good. So, you know, I've not only Suicidal but Misfits and Dead Cross, you know, their teams, you know, they're all understanding of my schedule, and we're all aware of everyone else's schedule too, because, you know, obviously all the other musicians, you know, they have things that they're doing too. So there's a good balance, and there's a really, you know, great camaraderie and understanding of schedules and everything. So it's cool, man. I don't think it's going to stop or slow down. I think this is only the beginning.
Sure. And it's funny too, because I, you know, most people make the jokes of no one paying attention to the drummer of the band. Whereas, you know, there are certain people that, you know, have the, not only the talent, but the capabilities of, you know, whatever, stepping out from behind the drum kit and being like, oh no, like, you know, I'm comfortable, you know, being spoken to and doing interviews and that sort of stuff. Was that something that kind of you learned how to do as you, you know, I guess you grew as a, not only as a musician, but as a human being? Or was that something that you had to really kind of grasp as more people started to pay attention to you?
It happened naturally, because, you know, when I first started, you know, with Slayer, you know, they threw us in the whole, you know, press cycle and interviews, and all right, Dave, you go over here, you're going to do this interview, you know, Jeff, you'll go to this group of people and do this series of interviews. So we were trained at a young age, so I became used to it. And I embraced it and enjoy it, and understand that there's always this, you know, this period before an album is released where you have to do all these interviews. So, you know, it's never bothered me. And I feel that anything that has developed, it's happened naturally. And, you know, even, you know, with me being just, you know, like they say, oh, just the drummer. No, I mean, I'm actually, you know, at times, you know, a leader and at times a songwriter and motivator, you know, cheerleader. Right. So you have like all these little different jobs that you take on to. So I don't know. It's pretty cool the way it's all developed.
Sure. Yeah. And that was, you know, this is something I was going to hit a little bit later, but the, you know, the notion of, you know, being a business person while also the expressing yourself artistically, did the because you've been able to navigate in so many business environments, you know, whether it was, you know, total DIY, like, you know, you guys booking your own shows and all that sort of stuff versus, you know, some of the, you know, playing arenas and that sort of stuff where, like you said, you have management that helps you and everything like that. Was the business side of music something that came naturally to you, or did you have to really kind of like learn as you went along?
Oh, you learn as you go along, and it was just dropped on my lap, you know, because when you're young, all you want to do is just play your music, leave me alone. All I just want to do is just be on stage. You know, you don't want to be bothered with anything, and you tend to ignore the most important, you know, part of your career, and that's, you know, who's paying you the money, you know, your cut, you know, and so, you know, you become aware of the process of who gets paid, what gets paid first, and what you end up with, and so you have to sometimes, you know, ask questions and take the bull by the horn, and sometimes, you know, even at a low level, at a low stage in a band's career, not a low, but a smaller stage in a band's career, you know, you play a show, you get paid, you got to pay for gas, you got to pay for, you know, your hotel rooms, you know, then you don't have much left. So you're on to the next show, you know, and you just learn this as you go along. It's interesting, but it's very important for musicians to be aware of, you know, where everything goes, you know, the money and, you know, who gets paid and everything.
Oh yeah.
You got to make sure there's no leaks in the money bag.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, I think it's one of those things too, where you only learn by making horrible mistakes, you know, where it's like, I don't do that anymore. I shouldn't.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. By experience. And you know, when I released my first album, I had just graduated from high school. I was 18 years old. So really, here I have a career. Am I supposed to go to college? Hey guys, hold on. I'm going to go to college and learn business. No, instead I took the road, and it's sometimes the hard way, but I wouldn't change it because it's made me who I am today.
Right.
And it's, you know, yeah, it sucks, but hey, it is what it is. You know, I'm a better person today by those experiences.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's that notion definitely comes from the environment that you were raised in regards to, you know, being a part of a DIY scene, whether it's like metal, punk, hardcore, it doesn't matter. If you have to do it yourself initially, you're going to be terrible at it when you begin, but you're going to develop those chops over time.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, kind of reflecting more individually on you, where, you know, you were born in Cuba and, you know, your brothers came to the U.S. before you, and, you know, you've laid out that story, you know, pretty eloquently in the past. It did, but, you know, something in kind of, you know, reading those pieces about your earlier life, did it feel chaotic at all, or was it one of those things where you didn't know any better, so you couldn't really call it chaotic?
Chaotic in to what terms? Like, what do you talk about being chaotic?
Yes, more specifically, just like your childhood in regards to, you know, once you immigrated to the United States and, like, you know, the process of getting out of Cuba and all that sort of stuff. Did it feel chaotic, or was it just like, oh, this is what I'm doing today?
Well, I really don't remember. I was 2 years old, you know, when my parents, you know, came to the U.S. and so I don't remember, you know, any of that. I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was chaotic, especially, you know, the trip over. You know, I heard stories that, you know, things were rough. You know, they had my parents, myself, and my sister camp out at the airport, you know, waiting for the airplane to leave. And, you know, with no food, no water. You know, the government says, oh, you'll have plenty, you know, you'll have plenty of food to eat when you're in America, you know. So, you know, things were a little brutal. But, you know, when we got here, you know, from what I remember, you know, we lived a normal life. My dad, you know, he worked, and my mom took care of the house. And And I was, you know, here I was, you know, starting kindergarten and first grade, second grade, and in an English speaking school. And, you know, I had to learn the language and learn it fast. You know, that was probably, you know, what I remember the most difficult part was, you know, kindergarten, first and second grade, you know, and having the teachers meet with my mom and saying, okay, you know, your son, you know, you need to tutor him or, you know, we need to put him in a different class. Cause obviously I was learning English and I had already known Spanish. So I was learning English and, you know, I had a little difficulty in, you know, figuring out words and stuff, but you know, not, you know, it wasn't chaotic, you know, it was just challenging.
Yeah. Oh, sure. No, I mean, it's cool. Like you had the foundation that was there in regards to, you know, your family and your support system. It was just a matter of pushing that it was okay for you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's been well documented that, you know, like you said, you released your first record when you were, you know, 18 years old, just out of high school. And like music was, you know, always your path. Like there was really no diverting you from that, you know, that notion.
No. Mm-mm.
And did, like, was the pursuit of it the idea that you were like, hey, no matter what, I'm going to figure out a way to like piece this together and like make a living? Or was it just kind of like, well, I'll see how long this goes?
No, I was headstrong. I wanted to be a rock star. That's what I wanted to be. You know, sure. I would listen to, you know, being a teenager, I would listen to Kiss. I listened to The Who, Zeppelin, you know, Jimi Hendrix and stuff. And I looked up to those bands and I wanted to be like that. You know, I would look at, you know, go to the store and check out the magazines, you know, like there was this magazine called Circus and Cream, and they, you know, they specialized in rock bands. And I remember thumbing through those, you know, and that's what I wanted to be, in front of a crowd, you know, and on stage. So there really wasn't anything else for me but that, you know. My parents, you know, didn't understand, I guess, how driven I was. And, you know, they were concerned that, you know, I was just occupied. My mind was occupied by this dream. You know, they were concerned that, hey, you know, we want you to get a job. We want you to learn how to get out there and hustle. You know, you're not going to be just, you know, living on a dream. You know, you gotta get out there and work. So, you know, they wanted me to, you know, obviously, you know, get a job and, you know, try to make something of myself, you know, because they did say many times, hey, this isn't going to get you anywhere.
Right.
You know, you got to get out there, you know, and, but I wasn't interested in anything else but music, you know. But if there was something that I was interested in or something that I would pursue, would have been music engineering. And also I was really good at, technical design. Like in high school, I took these courses and shortly after high school, I got a job at, for 9 months. I was designing enclosures for generator sets for hospitals and different facilities. So my path was going either in design, technical design, or music, and music obviously took the path.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's cool. Cause I mean, the reason I asked that is because, you know, the notion, you know, I'm sure when you were looking at these larger than life bands, you know, Kiss, Led Zeppelin, like the path from point A to point B is daunting. It's not like, oh, I'm going to wake up in 2 years and all of a sudden be in an amphitheater playing in front of a ton of people. But just the idea that like, hey, I want to make this my living, you know, good or bad. I just want to try to do the best I can at it.
Yeah, we were driven, you know, very young. You know, we went out and made our own lights, made our own pyros, you know, our own light system, you know, made our own pyro. We'd go out and flyer, make a bunch of flyers and go flyer the high school late at night, you know, stick a flyer inside every locker. And, you know, that's what we did, which is, you know, similar to what people do today, you know, what they do, just post, you know, but we actually did the groundwork and, you know, hit all the local schools. And so it was different, But it was also a different mindset. We were, I think, more driven than normal. I think the normal kids. We were passionate and wanted to make it happen. And oddly enough, we released, Show No Mercy in 83. We were, December of 83, we were in Europe on stage, at playing festivals in 84.
Right.
So it did happen.
Right.
We did wake up and a year later, 2 years later, I was on a big stage. It was odd, and it's been since then a bizarre but amazing trip.
Right, for sure. Clearly people focus on your double bass prowess and your talent at that, and introducing it to a lot of aggressive music, and clearly it's going to be the first or second line of your eulogy. But but why was that just something that you were drawn to initially in regards to kind of not focusing solely on, hey, I'm just going to focus on double bass and it would be terrible at everything else, because clearly that's not the case for you. But it seemed like you put a large focus on that. Was that just kind of a function of your interest, or was that just a deliberate thing that you were trying to kind of carve out for yourself?
No, it was a function of my interest. I was a fan of drummers that had recorded songs with double bass. Some of the drummers that performed with Judas Priest, and of course, Filthy Taylor from Motorhead. When I heard No Sleep Till Hammersmith, and heard some of the double bass work, it was awesome. It totally inspired me to buy another bass drum, and not only did it sound good, but it looked really cool when you had a double bass drum set, and if you can use it, that was even better. Because there were times I did see, bands, let's say, I couldn't tell you who, but let's say, for example, Boston, not a double bass kind of band, but they would have a double bass drum set on stage just because it looked good, but they would never use it. You would never hear it in the music. Let me say it again. I know Boston probably didn't use a double bass kit on stage, but that was just the example that there were bands out there that were doing it, that were showing a kit on stage, but they wouldn't actually use it. And we made sure that we, implemented that style.
Right.
And by increasing, I think increasing the speed that the double bass was being played, that was in part influenced and driven by the punk attitude, that punk energy to play fast. And so that's how everything just became a little bit quicker. And I think in part was, also that young energy, that you had at that time and kind of still have, to play that kind of music, that influenced it and drove it to that level.
No, absolutely. It makes total sense. And so was ostensibly Slayer your first experience in regards to, touring and, seeing the road and stuff like that, or had you done previous things that, gave you a little taste of that tour life?
Yeah, Slayer was the first band I had toured with, the first band I got in a van with, and we traveled across the country. Actually, our first U.S. tour was in a U-Haul truck and I think a 1978 Camaro, I think something like that. I don't know.
Right.
And but I did play in a couple other bands before, I had in high school, in the early days of high school. I think ninth grade, I had one band, and then 10th grade, I had another one, and then Slayer came into the picture, I think summer of 11th grade.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Okay, I'm here to talk to you about Smiles. Now, I know that may sound kind of random, but there's this rad company that I've partnered with called Smile Direct Club. Now, to be completely honest and transparent, this is something that my wife was going to do because she, you know, she was very interested in it. But after I've kind of, you know, started to pay attention to the process that she was going through, I was like, you know what? I want to do this. My teeth are not perfect at all. Hers are totally spot on. So I have commandeered this experience because, you know, for those of you that are total super nerds of the show, maybe heard an ad for this a couple months ago. And she did that read, well, with my help, obviously. But Smile Direct Club. So what do? They work directly with you to get unbelievable results in regards to, you know, straightening your teeth, making your smile as bright and as awesome as possible. Like, it's not a teeth whitening thing. Basically, it's a, you know, it's gets your stuff straight. So the other Invisible Align brands can cost up to $5,000, which is absolutely absurd. But Smile Direct Club aligners are 70% less. And you could even save more with insurance or a flexible spending account. There are two easy ways to pay. You can either have a single payment of $1,850 and then they waive a bunch of other costs, or you can have a credit thing, which is called Smile Pay. It's $95 a month for 22 months, no credit check required. Now, I am about a month or so into the process of, you know, I did the measurements, and I sent in my molds, my teeth, and now they're in the process of getting those retainers out to me, or those aligners. I apologize for the terminology, but it's aligners. That's what they are. So I'm very, very excited to start that process. And it couldn't be easier. Like, when they send you the kit, it's in this awesome box. You got the mold. You mix it. It takes you less than 15 minutes, and then you're done. You ship it off to them. There's no further thought. And you can get started with an at-home impression kit for only $95. And it's covered by their smile guarantee. So if the liners aren't a good fit for you, you get your money back. So if, you know, you do the impressions and it's like, oh no, like this, you're good. You don't need to worry about this. Then the money comes back to you. And then better yet, the listeners of this show can save 50% on your evaluation cost with this offer. So visit Smile Direct Club and use the promo code WORDS. And then if you or your children just want to get that straight smile, so like you got to be over 12 though. That's the one thing I'll mention. Dive in, go to the website, smiledirectclub.com, use the code WORDS, and you get 50% off. And it's available all around the United States, except for North Carolina. So you North Carolinians can't take a part of this offer. But it's awesome. I love this product, and I think that if you are even just remotely interested in straightening your teeth a bit, you know, getting your best impression out there, this is the product for you. So Smile Direct Club, I love it. You should too. SmileDirectClub.com, promo code WORDS, 50% off. Boom. And did you enjoy touring, like, once you started to do it? Because I know that there are people who, you know, the common conception of touring is, oh, you know, you get a big bus and you travel around and you play some shows. But obviously it's not like that at the beginning. So did you like it initially, or was it something you had to learn how to get how to like?
I loved it. I loved it. It was freedom. You know, you get to travel across the country and you get to do what you love. I enjoy, and I still enjoy to this day playing, touring in a van. It's not necessarily tour buses. I really don't care if it's a tour bus. I mean, it's great. It adds convenience and it's comfortable because you get a bunk, you know, but I've done tours where it's just a Suburban, three guys in a Suburban with all our gear, you know, traveling across the country and just, you know, checking into Super 8 motels on the way. I did that a year and a half ago. And still, you know, I think today I would do it. So I don't know. It's not daunting, and it's not something that I didn't like. I always enjoyed it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah. I think it's especially easier to live in different worlds as far as like the comfort level of touring when you have done those, you know, all right, we're only gonna be playing in front of 100 people, and you know, we're in the middle of nowhere, and we're gonna get a hotel room. Because, like, you know, if you get your first touring experience is something like, you know, A++, like tour bus scenario, you're gonna be like, wait a minute, I don't want to go backwards.
Right. And you become a little arrogant. Oh, I can't do it. It's like, you know, dude, fucking suck it up, man. You know, because I love it. I've played, man, you know, it's a roller coaster, which is what I love. I hate the merry-go-round. You know, I enjoy a roller coaster much better. And that's how my life has been. You know, I could be at the top 1 year, you know, playing Yankee Stadium, big tour, boom. And then a year and a half, 2 years later, I'm playing a small club with 100 people in it, less than 100 people, you know. And then now I'm back on the bigger stages, you know, playing the Downloads, you know, with Suicidal. And then, you know, headlining Riot Fest with Misfits, you know, and now Dead Cross, you know. So things are, you know, they move, you know, and kind of cycles almost. But you have to love all sides of the both sides. You got to love both sides of the coin, the good side and the bad side, you know.
Yeah.
You got to just really, you got to embrace it, because you can't forget your roots. You know, then you become arrogant and, you know, self-deserving and all this shit. And it's like, man, that's not the personality I never want to be. You know, that's not the person. Yeah, I refuse to be that way. So I embrace every scenario and situation, you know, and enjoy for what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't, you try not to look past it. You just look at what you're experiencing currently and be like, oh yeah, there's pros and cons to each thing as you're doing it.
So, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good,
I love traveling. I actually enjoy traveling on our own. Let's say if we were in a minivan or whatever, and the gear in another truck, and let's say I'm driving, because if I want to pull over at that, you know, at that museum of the largest, you know, ball of twine or whatever, you know, on the side of the road, you know, I'll stop. You know, when you're on a tour bus and, you know, you're on a particular schedule, you can't do that. You know, hey, I want to buy a box of fireworks on the side of the, off the 10 freeway in the middle of Arizona.
Right.
You know, you can do it, or whatever. And so I kind of enjoy that. You know, that style of, or that method of traveling, you know, a little better, but the comfort part of it is also cool.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
something I forgot to mention or ask a little bit earlier, what kind of, kid did you find yourself being, you know, in high school and as you're experiencing all this music, like, were you the, you know, quiet artistic kid? Were you, you know, the weirdo outsider because you were into a bunch of weird music, or, you know, what sort of archetype, would you find yourself falling into?
Well, shit, I had long hair.
Okay.
I wore a leather vest, I was like a cross between, a kind of hybrid between punk and metal, right. You know? I remember there was a period where I was really into metal and I had this, like I said, a leather vest and striped shirts and, you know, kind of Judas Priest crosses, scorpions or something, you know, right. I'm sure you've seen some of those pictures, early pictures of Slayer. And then, you know, it became with, you know, t-shirts and jeans, wearing, you know, punk rock shirts. And, but I still had long hair. So I don't know. It's just,
were you outgoing or were you more of a recluse? Like how did you,
No, I was outgoing. I wasn't a recluse. No, I was sociable. You know, yeah, I hung out with everyone and, you know, ditched school like everyone else did and, you know, got into some trouble. But, you know, for the most part, you know, I was a good kid, you know, good student. But, you know, I had some edge to me.
Sure. As one would when you're wearing a leather vest.
Right, exactly. Hey, but I went to school, you know, so.
Right. You did your part. You did your part.
Yeah.
Something that, you know, I find interesting too is you know, this more speaks probably to your personality than anything else, but, you know, clearly you've existed in a world that has, you know, claimed many people from, you know, very debaucherous habits and, you know, a lot of other terrible dark paths, but you yourself haven't gone so far as to, you know, dive down one of those completely where it swallowed you up. How did it, I mean, I guess, how did you navigate that as you,
luck.
Okay.
I was very lucky. I feel that I have traveled, you know, those dark paths. But, you know, I wasn't in a good place in my life. You know, so, you know, so I've been able to kind of save myself in a way, from falling into that. You know, I have been, you know, part of that, but it's never been, you know, public. You know, it's not like something, oh, you know, everyone knows that, you know, either I was a drunk or a druggie. No, everything was just, it was to myself and personal, you know. So I've kept everything under control and I've, you know, I've basically, you know, I've stormed through or I've weathered the storm, as they say, I believe. I think that's how you say it, right?
Yes, you've weathered the storm. Where it's like, yeah, you well, I mean, I guess to your point, like you have, you know, you've sampled the things that exist and swallow people up, but you haven't been consumed by it. So like, I guess
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So yeah, but
exactly.
I mean, to your credit, you probably, I guess, like I said, going back to your personality, you don't have one that would lead you to something, I guess, you know, darker and be more addictive.
No, so. No. The only addictive thing I have is music and coffee. That's it. You know, caffeine. That's it. You know, which I'm very, you know, happy. And right now, you know, as you get older, you know, you, you take care, at least you would hope that people would take care of themselves. You know, I try to eat as healthy as possible. I take my vitamins, you know, and stay away from negative people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's toxic right there. If you're not around the right group of people, you know, that shit brings you down, you know, more than you can imagine, you know.
Totally.
So
misery loves company, man.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, not me. I just stay away from all negativity and just stay positive and move forward. And I think that that's what I believe has gotten me to where I am today.
Sure. Well, I think too, the notion that you can be a person who, you know, may have an opinion about the way things go, but, you know, relatively speaking, you're probably easy to work with, you know, because you've been able to exist in all of these environments in which, you know, can be, one would probably describe like, oh yeah, you know, a writing session with Slayer probably gets pretty intense at times, but you've been able to, you know, and then the same thing where it's like suicidal tendencies where, you know, someone would look at those guys and be like, oh my gosh, that must be difficult to, you know, work with those dudes. But you've been able to, I guess, be a chameleon in many different environments. Do you feel that that's kind of, you know, more, again, going back to your personality, you feel like you're able to blend into a lot of different scenarios and still contribute?
Yes, absolutely. You have to. Being a drummer, you need to have that personality. You can't, you know, like insist that it needs to be the certain way, you know, because you have to blend in into this. Let's say, for example, Mike Muir, you know, he's already established a style and a sound and a direction in his music and life. And I'm not going to go in there, oh, we need to do this and we need to do that, and, you know, start imposing my thoughts and ideas. I mean, that's just not conducive to a working environment. You know, you do have to, yeah, I'll interject some opinion, you know, but, you know, there's a way of doing it politely and without, you know, any disrespect. You know, so that's kind of the way I've been doing things, you know, where you're just yes, you are a chameleon. You have to be, you know, and it's the only way to keep the peace and move forward and get a good reputation. You know, people are going to like, you know, to work with you if, you know, you're cooperative and, you know, if you listen, observe, and, you know, follow instructions. And, you know, that way you could create the best possible piece of music, you know, for the band that you're performing in. You know, same thing with Misfits. It's like, I wasn't going to go in there and throw all kinds of dumbass double bass into their music when they never recorded a double bass in the band. You know, some fans, oh, you know, doesn't sound like Lombardo. Why didn't he add some double bass? Like, dude,
that's not,
I'm playing for the Misfits.
Right. They,
double pedal never existed. And in punk, you don't use a double bass. So you try to give what that band, you know, you got to be respectful, you know, to the history of the band and the music.
Yeah, no, yeah. Talk about a horrible reaction if, like, you went out there at Riot Fest and just smoked everybody from a musicianship standpoint, and everyone's like, dude, calm down, Dave.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, that would have bummed a few people out, I imagine.
Yeah. But it was a great experience. Yeah, you just have to be. You have to add what's necessary. You know, you just have to add what it needs. You don't need to overplay. I'm not here to. I'm here to enhance the band, not, you know, show off. You know, I'm here to add to the band. You know, not to showboat.
Yeah.
You know, that's not me. I don't like that. You know, some drummers, you know, they come into a band and, you know, they're throwing all these chops all these drum chops. And it's like, it doesn't even sound like the original song. How can you do that? You know,
yeah.
You know, give it your style, give it your edge, breathe life into it, but don't take away from its originality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's important. You have to be respectful to the history of not only the band, but to the music, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
A fine line, you know.
Sure.
And I sometimes try to interject a little bit of myself, and I'm always asking, you know, hey, can I add this? you know, would you mind if I add this, this little drum roll? It's not on the album, but, I think it'll be kind of cool. And, you know, usually it's a yes, but if it's a no, then fine. Let's go back to the original. No problem.
Right. We tried. You know? We tried it.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Something that always struck me as really, you know, I just respected the decision. Like, you know, when you left Slayer, and the notion was that, like, hey, you know, my family is an incredibly important thing, and I need to be present for, you know, the birth of my first child and all of these things that, you know, a lot of people say is important, but, you know, you left a very highly functional from a business perspective band at that point. I'm guessing that, you know, I mean, you clearly don't regret your decision like we were talking about earlier, because they all led you to where you're at now. But was there a lot of kind of, you know, internal wrestling where it was just like, man, I'm leaving this thing? And yes, of course, like, my kid is clearly very, very important. Like, that, I'm not, you know, giving you short shrift from that. But was there a lot of wrestling around you had to do with that?
No, there wasn't. Because... you know, once I feel something, you know, once I get a thought in my mind, it's like, okay, no, I need to do this. You know, you're convinced. I don't need to convince myself. It's like, I know that this is the important thing to do. This is the right thing to do. You know, I still have my talent. I still play drums. I can do it somewhere else. You know, so it's not like, it's not going to, you know, break me. I feel like I just needed to just move on and continue to create and continue doing what I loved.
Right.
It's just there really wasn't, and you know, I knew that that's what I needed to do.
Right. Well, I really like the way that you put that, where, You know, clearly, like you said, this isn't, this is the end of, you know, one thing that you've been familiar with for so long and, you know, it's successful, but it's not like it's diminishing the fact that, you know, you're not going to wake up one day, you know, a week after, you know, the birth of your kiddo and you're like, wow, I can't play drums anymore. Like that will clearly always be with you.
Yeah. On the contrary, I was driven even more. You know, so, and that's when I, you know, performed or I created the band Grip Incorporated.
Right.
You know, and that we released five albums, and I loved that band. And now listening back, you know, I'm very proud of that music. And a lot of people feel the same. You know, they really like that work, that body of work that I did. And I got to meet some amazing people. And, you know, like we said earlier, you learn a lot through the process, you know, of creating a new band and what it takes and in a different time, you know, because I had to form a new band in the mid 90s, you know, where grunge, you know, was becoming popular, where industrial music, you know, was, you know, the hard style of music, at least I got into, you know, and then, you know, there was bands like Korn and, you know, that were coming up that were a bit different. So, you know, it was challenging, but well worth it.
Yeah. I also like what you said right there too, where, you know, a lot of people view, you know, these life events from an artistic expression, whether it's like, you know, marriage, kids, like all these things, like, oh man, you're not going to have like time to do these things. But I really like how the fact that you, all it did for you was refocus on the fact like, no, I'm taking this seriously because like now, you know, I clearly have another mouth to feed beyond my own and my family's. Like now, this is really on me as opposed to where I, you know, I was just playing music for, you know, ostensibly as selfish reasons for just yourself. You know?
Right, right, exactly. So, you know, again, it's not an easy road. And if anybody asks me today, hey, you know, what do you think? Should I pursue a career in music? And it'd be like, it's hard. It's very, very hard. I mean, my own son, you know, he tells me, Dad, it's so difficult, you know, not only to start a band and be a part of a working band, but, you know, also to follow in my footsteps, you know. And I tell him, you know, I said, son, you know, I was brought up at a different time. I'm on a whole different path. You just continue doing what you're doing. If you love it, you know, just keep doing it. There's no reason to stop. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, I've always told them that, you know, I'll play in front of, you know, 40,000, 50,000 people, but I'll also play in front of 50 people. It doesn't matter. As long as you're playing, that should satisfy the passion at any level. So, you know, it's a crazy ass career and a crazy ass world you have to, you know, live in and deal with, you know, because it's fickle, you know, it's really, you know, you never know if people are going to like it or not.
Right. Or it's very much the what have you done for me lately attitude, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Everybody wants to be, you know, spoon fed, you know, what they like. And instead of, you know, them, you know, kind of embracing it and maybe growing with it or, you know, with the music or style, whatever it is, you know, if it doesn't fall under a particular category, they just don't like it, you know? So you just have to try to convince them, you know, in one way or another.
Right. you know, like you mentioned earlier in regards to you feel in such a zen state where you're able to be creative in all these different musical endeavors that are all, you know, under the umbrella of aggressive music, but are also distinctly different. And, you know, I mean, going back to, you know, your time in Phantomas and like you said, with Dead Cross, you, to me, just like observing your career from a outsider's perspective, to me, it looks very much like people approach you and you go, hey, that sounds fun. Let's do it. Is that, I mean, like, is that kind of, in simple terms, is that kind of like how things kind of come up where it's like, oh, that sounds rad. Let's do that.
Yes, basically. You know, I mean, there's bands that I've turned down, you know, and there's projects that I've turned down. And I don't know why, but for some reason, something hits me and it's my gut, my heart, whatever it is, you know, I listen to the offer and, you know, I either, you know, feel very positive or I feel nothing at all. And, you know, when the Misfits offer came in and Glenn called me, you know, there was something, there was one thing I knew, and although I wasn't familiar with the music, but I did know that the name Misfits was larger than life. You know, it was just, it was a name and a logo and, you know, that skeleton, you know, it was something that has been around for a long time and people knew it. So, when he asked me, it was almost like, you know what? Absolutely. Let's do this.
Right. Right.
This sounds like fun. You know, this sounds like it sounds, you know, like a good time and historic, you know, cause the band hadn't been together in 35 years or something. So I had to say yes, you know. And, you know, when Glenn Danzig calls you up and says, hey, you know, we're doing a reunion with the Misfits. Really? Are you going to say no?
Totally.
Yeah. And just like Mike Muir calls you and says, hey, Dave, you want to play some shows with Suicidal? You know, come on. You're going to say yes. So,
there was no way that you could have been like, you know what? I don't think so. And then like a week later, you'd be like, wait, what was I saying? What was I thinking? Why did I say
that? Yeah. Yeah. Why didn't I take that? You know?
Right.
But, you know, you just got to follow your heart. And I felt that, you know, everything fell into place at a perfect time. So,
yeah. Do you, kind of on that same point, we, you know, you're playing, you're kind of airdropped into these really, you know, high profile scenarios, whether it was, like you said, the Misfits reunion or, you know, playing with Suicidal Tendencies, just because, you know, I mean, Suicidal, like, you know, they play a handful of shows each year, but, you know, when you, Suicidal Tendencies come to town, like a lot of people pay attention to it. Do you, like, I know this sounds like a total basic question, but like, do you get nervous at all anymore? Or is it one of those things you kind of just operate on autopilot when it comes to those high pressure situations?
I get nervous.
Okay.
Very nervous. Yes.
How does it make
I get excited.
Okay.
But, you know, there's a bit of nervousness because it's like, let's say, for example, the first Misfit show. And even the first Suicidal show, mm-hmm. These are like, for me, yeah, you learn the music and, you know, you're playing on and you're about to hit the stage for the first time ever with this band. And there's like anxiety, there's nerves and, you know, you just don't know how it's going to, you know, translate. Even at rehearsals, you know, there's nothing, you know, more than the pressure you get, you know, from going on stage. That's when all eyes are on you. Absolutely. You cannot make a mistake. You have to be on point, make sure that you remember every single cue, every note that you took down. And, that kind of adds to the nerves, but after you get used to it, say with Suicidal, you become anxious. You know, you're just like, come on, I want to play, mm-hmm. you know, when you get used to it. The shows that I find that really, you know, mess with my nerves are shows I do when I have to improvise. Okay. I do these shows with this this amazing composer named John Zorn. And him and I, we do these saxophone drum duets, improvisation duets, and they're challenging. And you know, you don't know what's going to happen, and adds so much to the excitement, you know, of the evening. Because he could start something, and you're like, okay, where do I take it from here? You know, and that's the challenge, you know, because he might throw something at you, you know, a melodic phrase, and you're just like, okay, you can't tell him, can you try that again? You know, you can't say that because we don't go over anything, any music whatsoever before we hit the stage. We just simply look at each other. Who starts? Who do you want to start? You? Me?
Right.
You know, Zorn will say, Dave, why don't you start? Or why don't we both start? You know, it's like, okay. And it's really cool. And that kind of performance is the one that really messes with me.
Right. Yeah. No, I can completely understand that because, you know, clearly there's no blueprint. Like, it's just, you're like, well, I guess I'm following this person's lead, and I hope that this lead that I'm going to do is not just stepping all over what he's doing.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can't play over, you can't, you know, in when you improvise, you have to kind of know when to take the spotlight and when to hold back, you know. And there's a lot of listening involved, and you have to really watch, you know, who you're improvising with, their body language,
right?
You know, so there's a lot involved where people might think, oh, you're just up there, you know, just making noise or whatever, just beating on the drum. It's like, no, we're actually listening to each other. And when you know you have a good show, when somebody walks up to you after the show and says, can I buy this music? You know, it's like, no, this was all improvised. This will be the only time you've ever heard this. And they're like, this is all written? And it's like, I mean, they say, this was all improvised? And it's like, yeah. He said, I thought, you know, it was written. It sounded like it was written. And I said, well, that's the art of improvising, right? Is to make something sound like it's supposed to be there. And so that's when you know you have a good show, you know, when it comes to improvising.
Yeah. No, that's amazing.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A few last things before I let you go. Nothing brings me so much entertainment than when, you know, I'm putting research anytime I speak to somebody on one of these. So like when, you know, you Google someone's name, my favorite thing is like in the auto populate of Google, it goes, you know, so like for your name, it would be, you know, Dave Lombardo. And then it has, you know, interview, drums, whatever. And then, you know, like third or fourth result is like net worth, which I find so funny because like, so, you know, that means that people are Googling people such as yourself and like, how much is Dave Lombardo worth? And I find it, you know, I find it just hilarious because it's like, you know, you're a working musician and like, yes, you've been able to make a living off of it. But, you know, from my estimation, you are not, you know, rolling around with like seven houses and are like, you know, seven.
Hell no.
Right. Exactly.
No way. Yeah. That I hate that, you know, because people have this view of you, like as if you're, like you said, rolling around and, you know, fucking, you know, Rolls Royces and Lamborghinis and no, you know, we're still, you know, working hard, you know. And yeah, all those numbers, those are way false.
Yeah.
Those are, oh, yeah, no, they are wrong. Well, I don't even know how they calculate that. What do they calculate the,
I have no idea.
The net worth of Slayer and divide it by four? No, I don't think so.
No, totally. Yeah. I frankly have never gone down the rabbit hole to even look at those numbers, but yeah, because I just, like I said, I find it so funny because there's no way that that whatever it is that it's spitting out is even remotely accurate portrayal of what this working musician is actually quote unquote worth. I just find it so funny, and I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're 100% right. And it annoys me a bit. Right. Sometimes I feel like telling him, you know what, remove my name from your list because, you know, it's not accurate.
Right.
And, you know, and besides that, it's none of your fucking business. You know?
Totally.
Yeah.
And so you know, like when you are clearly not, you know, on the road or, you know, being in your active press cycle like you are right now, you know, what are some things that you do that are, I guess, you know, separate from the music world, whether it's like, you know, yeah, I like to, you know, collect Legos or like whatever from that perspective. Like, is there any other things that are not attached to music or is like, yo, this is my thing. There's, you know, this, I live and breathe this stuff.
I live and breathe music.
Okay.
Because even on my days off or days I don't have really anything to do, I'm constantly thinking of music or listening to something. I find peace in music, you know, because it occupies my mind. But I think another thing I enjoy is peace. I'm at a point I love chaos, but I really enjoy peace as well, you know. And you know, just going to the beach, okay. Walking, taking walks, and just.
Are you messing around with like meditation or anything like that?
I always have.
Okay.
I practiced some of this, you know, visualization kind of meditation when I was in high school. And, you know, I remember my friend, he goes, dude, this is a hypnosis tape. My teacher in psychology, you know, gave me. And I said, what is it? He said, check it out, man. Picture yourself playing drums in front of, you know, thousands of people. I said, really? He said, yeah, man, do it. And so it was this cassette tape and some guy just, you know, talking in a very... very calm voice telling you to, you know, take deep breaths and picture yourself in the most comfortable chair in your home, you know, and picture yourself floating in space. And now picture yourself behind or picture yourself doing something that you love and want to be successful with. And it was this whole, I think, you know, 20-30 minute cassette tape of this kind of talk. And I loved it. And, you know, I don't have that tape anymore or anything. But, you know, when I am presented with a new project, now we're back to working instead of, notice how we're going back to work instead of relaxing. But it's along the same vein. So when I'm at home relaxing and I'm offered a new project, I will listen to the music more than I will practice the music. I will listen to it, close my eyes, and visualize myself performing the music before I even pick up a pair of drumsticks and try to play it. And I think that's part of the learning process for me. So that's to the extent I practiced any kind of meditation or anything like that. But I do, what I do enjoy is just, you know, taking walks, sitting on a patio, having a sangria, you know, or something, right, you know, just, that for me is like, that's very peaceful and enjoyable for me. It's like, relaxing.
Yeah.
You know,
stillness.
Yeah. Stillness.
Yeah.
And you know, especially when you find a great location and you're just, you know, let's say looking out to the ocean or you're in the mountains or whatever, and just being quiet, you know, just sitting there quiet and, absorbing is for me very gratifying.
Yeah, absolutely. I can easily see that. The last thing I wanted to hit on was, you know, clearly since you're a father and like you mentioned that your son's into drumming, you know, clearly, kids get to ages in which they think that their parents are clearly not the coolest thing ever and whatever they're into is lame and they got to forge their own path and that stuff. But I mean, clearly it sounds like there is maybe some of that at the house, but maybe not to the extent of what it is for, you know, maybe other parents that are like, you know, accountants or something like that. How is that, you know, kind of back and forth with your kids where, how many kids do you have? Do you have two or?
I have three. I have two boys and one girl.
Okay. And so like, what is their relationship with, you know, your music and your, you know, your overactive nature to be in 100,000 bands?
Well, I think they find me a little entertaining because, okay. I think they're more mature sometimes than I am because I get to, I'm sometimes a little, you know, I come off the rails sometimes, you know, and they laugh, you know, and, you know, I'm sorry, what was the question again? I got distracted here.
No, it's fine. I was basically just saying like their relationship with your music. Whether they think it's cool that dad plays in a bunch of bands, or it's like, oh yeah, dad's into some weird stuff. But like I still love him. But
no, they think it's cool. They enjoy it. But like I told you before, they know that it's difficult, and they've seen me go through many, difficult moments, in my life, from very high to damn all the way to the bottom. So, they understand, how it is, but no, they think dad's cool. And, I don't think, they've ever looked at me and says, oh man, he's out of it, or man, he's a pain or anything. No, I think I'm a pretty cool dad. And, and in turn, they're good kids too.
That's
cool. My oldest is he's into audio engineering.
Okay.
He works for this company, editing music for like commercials and music videos. And he's also working at Pro Audio at Guitar Center. And then my other son, he has a band, and he manages, another Guitar Center in Beverly Hills. And so, they're all involved in music. They're all doing their thing, and they're all kicking ass. And my daughter, she really loves horses. She trains her own horse and,
nice.
Has been working with it for the past probably, 3-4 months. And, she's about to graduate next year, and who knows where, her path is going to take her. So,
yeah.
But very cool. I'm very proud of all three of them.
Yeah, no, that's cool. The reason I asked that is because, it's interesting because, clearly like your parents had no context for what you were doing, from a drumming aspect, and the fact that you wanted to play in a band, they were just like, what the hell is Dave doing? But then,
exactly.
But then now, you have a unconventional life path, and now you're probably able to look at your kids with, really whatever path that they decide to choose, and like have a basic understanding of like, oh yeah, if they're doing something, that's pursuing the arts, I did that, so I understand that. And then, if one of your kids decides to, be a lawyer or whatever, you're like, well, I didn't do that, but I still understand it,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I always tell them, to follow, let's say like you just mentioned, if you want to be a lawyer, you're not going to then, get a job at a music store. You're going to want to get a job at a law firm and work your way up, either in that law firm or in that that job style, that career. So I always make sure that, that I tell them, hey, just always work in even though you may not be playing on stage, drums in front of thousands of people, you could still play drums and have a band, but also have maybe a job in the music industry, be a part of the music industry. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to, be on tour and doing that, because sometimes that doesn't happen for everyone. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're doing what you love, which is music, being a part of doing something that you love, that I think is important, so
yeah, no,
kind of gets you ready for the future. If something happens in this branch of your career, hey, you can go to this other, this other branch of music and work there and, try to be as, diverse as you can within, your own passion.
Right, right. No, that's awesome. It's cool that you're able to, like I said, have that context and be supportive. So that's very cool. Well, Dave, I honestly really appreciate you taking this time because, this is an enjoyable chat for me. So thanks for sharing all of what you did.
You're welcome, Raymond.
Yeah, that was Dave. Great dude, right? Just doing the damn thing, playing drums unbelievably well, and keeps that level head on his shoulders because and granted, I would never bring a person that doesn't have a level head on the show because I probably wouldn't have very much to talk to them about because they would be too much up their own butt. So, but Dave, thank you very much. And thank you very much to his publicist, Monica, for hooking this up, because I really, really appreciate when publicists you know, are just pleasant people to deal with. It's very nice to be able to deal with professional people and executing these interviews and making my life easier because of it. So, yeah, what do we got next week? We have John Porcell from the legendary bands Youth of Today, Shelter, Judge, and Project X. Let's not forget about Project X. The dude's been around, and I was very excited to go over to his apartment, and we had a unbelievable conversation. I learned things that I never really learned about in regards to like Youth of Today and their early touring life and then Shelter and just a bunch of interesting stuff. So, and that's in advance of Shelter's appearance at the beautiful This Is Hardcore Festival, which I've still yet to go to. But yeah, maybe one of these days I'll make it out there. Anyways, that's all I got for you guys this week. And please be safe, everybody. Until next week.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.